afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to We're Gonna Need a Bigger Show, episode 37. Shit, I wasn't on here last week.
Boo.
I know. Boo. But that was a good show. We'll talk more about that in a second.
Okay.
But as always, I am joined by
Cameron B. Childs.
Cameron B. Childs. And today we have a very special guest in Living Room Studio. Paper artist. Was that what you call yourself? Paper artist?
Why not?
No. What's the correct?
It's paper boy.
Paper boy? I'm paper boy.
But artist, toy collector.
Yeah.
All around cool guy. We have.
And,
oh.
He's part in Devil Cock.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And he was in our film, Die Devil Cock. He was in it several times.
Breaking Bomber and Sicko the Clown.
Seasick.
Ooh. Whatever.
That's fine. I like Sicko.
Yeah, yeah. That's my nickname.
Say your name.
Charles Clary.
Yes. Yeah. Welcome. Thank you for coming out today.
Thanks for having me. This is kind of cool.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. It is cool.
I mean, it'll be fun. Hopefully. Awesome. Or you'll hate it, and then you'll never come back
Whatever. I can do anything for
a while. I think we should do a beer podcast sometime, and we just
get wasted.
Get a little wasted.
We keep having this idea. I think we've got so many potential guests for it, we're going to have to do
several.
One every few months.
Yeah, probably.
You know.
But you were also supported us for our fundraiser drive.
Yeah.
We appreciate that.
Of course.
Yeah. These mics are
proof of that.
Yeah. Sweet.
So
you're welcome.
I'm very appreciative. So last week I wasn't on, and you and Mallory, our producer, talked to the Acorn people.
Yes, they were a fun bunch.
That sounded like a fun show. I'm sorry I missed that one. They've got a lot of really cool stuff coming up. We'll have to have them back on though, because I'd love to chit chat with them.
Yeah, they got that laser tag thing happening.
That was kind of cool.
A really cool idea.
Maybe we do a live show from the laser tag.
Yeah, totally. Running around with guns and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you meant while we're playing?
Yeah,
why not?
I guess so.
Little bits, kind of like the Bonnaroo thing.
Oh, the Phillips Bonnaroo. Yeah, some good episodes. Russ Bost. Yeah. Boss was on. Russell Gin.
Yeah.
Russell Gin. That's a whole other thing.
All right.
But Russ White was on, and Philip Maloney was on. Three solid episodes back to back.
Yep.
So this has got to be good.
Or awful.
Yeah, it's gonna be one of the two.
Or we're gonna drop the ball. You know how when you hit that two strikes.
Yeah.
And that third one is just a gutter ball.
It's gonna be like Freddy 2 or Halloween 3.
Oh, those are both classics.
Well, then this is totally going to be a classic.
This is going to be Jason X.
We've expressed our love for Halloween 3.
Many, many times.
Yeah.
When we had Scott on, he's a big Halloween 3 fan.
Yeah. Three more days to Halloween.
Halloween, three more days to Halloween, Silver Shamrock.
Not the first time we've done that
on
the show.
So I guess we'll just jump right into it. Let's talk a little news.
Let's do it.
Temuera Morrison has been cast as Boba Fett in the upcoming standalone Star Wars movie. Now, he played Jango Fett in the new trilogy, the newest trilogy. And they haven't said what the standalone movie's about. Pretty sure it's going to be about Boba Fett. You don't have Boba Fett in a movie where it's not about Boba Fett at this point.
IG-88. They're going to really.
Oh my god, let's get IG-88
on what it means to be IG-88.
Or Bosk.
Is that the lizard man? The lizard man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Dengar? Why do I remember all this?
Deep cuts. It's just gonna be droids.
Just all droids. And then Boba Fett just pops up. Look at me!
The screaming, tortured droid in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the one that gets his foot.
Like, you should learn some respect, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
There's a lot of good droids.
I don't know, I'm kind of excited. Well, it's gonna be Gareth Edwards, who did Godzilla and Monsters. I haven't seen Godzilla yet. Did you see it now?
Yeah.
None of us saw Monsters, though.
Yeah.
Monsters is really, really good. I like it. I
enjoyed it.
So, I don't know. I kind of have faith in him to do a standalone Star Wars movie, and I like the idea of it possibly being Boba Fett. That's pretty cool.
You better knock on wood.
There we go.
So, earlier today, we may have jumped the gun a little bit. On our Facebook page, we announced that Tina Fey was working on Hocus Pocus 2, which is all over the internet today.
Did you get had?
But it's a lie.
It seems, yeah. It seems like her representatives have come forward and said that that is not the truth. Which is a big fucking bummer.
Should we be concerned about whether it's the truth or whether it should be the truth? You know what I'm saying?
I kind of wonder if it's news that wasn't meant to be get out yet.
Possibly.
You know, that it's one of those things that's being talked about and, you know. Because, I mean, it sounds legit, but it's hard on the internet. You know, everything sounds legit, and then none of it is.
Yeah, you got old.
I said Bette Midler's old.
Yeah, well, and that was the other thing. They didn't mention whether or not it would be the plot was going to be that a woman who's a descendant of the Sanderson sisters, has to team up with a witch hunter to save her children who have run afoul of witches on Halloween night.
Oh.
Didn't they make that? Wasn't that Hansel and Gretel?
didn't they make that movie already?
Yeah, turn out.
The Witch Hunter is going to be Jeremy Renner. Yeah. Actually, they announced this week that they're doing a sequel to that.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it for its awfulness.
I watched about 10 minutes of it, and I need to watch it, because Cameron banged the hell out of that drum. He was like Hansel and Gretel for Witch Hunters.
I thought it was great.
I need to check it out.
It was entertaining.
Okay.
It's one of those good, bad movies.
I've added it to, kind of like Van Helsing. No, that's just a bad movie.
No,
that's just a bad movie. So I
edit that out.
Yeah, probably. Edit point.
Edit from history.
I don't think we should edit
that. Everyone should know my shame. Yeah, I've added it to my queue, so I will definitely watch it.
You should.
Probably soon.
That's good.
I
have the DVD.
Do you?
Not ashamed.
Oh, you bought that.
It was cheap.
In other kind of rumor news, but still report-worthy, possible spoiler alert for Avengers 2. So if you care that much, block your ears. But
I'm going to go ahead and do that, yeah.
Really?
I care about the Avengers.
Well, it doesn't ruin. I don't think it ruins the movie.
I'm okay with it.
Go ahead, then.
Okay. You're part of the show. You've got to listen. Apparently, it's possible that towards the end of the movie, the Hulk diverts a rocket to space, but he remains on the rocket. And that's kind of how he goes out of the film. So it sets up for a Planet Hulk storyline. But the new news is that instead of it being another Avengers movie, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will be on Planet Hulk.
Interesting.
I'm totally about that story. Guardians of the Galaxy and the Incredible Hulk together in one movie. Please make this happen, Hollywood.
It's never going to be what you want it to be.
No, it won't. And especially now, Mark Ruffalo's kind of... He said that'll never happen because it would be mostly the Hulk. It wouldn't be him as Bruce Banner. I don't care.
When am I going to get my Smart Hulk? I like Smart Hulk.
Oh, and you're never going to get Smart Hulk.
I want little glasses and like, me Smart Hulk, me no stuff.
I don't think he talk like that as Smart Hulk.
Whatever.
He'd be like, me Hulk.
Me no science.
Me do good at astrophysics.
No, they already did that, though. It was a good animated film.
Yeah, but...
Just let it be an animated film.
No.
Yeah.
I need it.
No.
I need it live action.
You say that, but
then
like,
it won't be any good.
Star Wars fan needed one. And look what they got.
Yeah, you're kind of right about that.
They got a really bad film.
You're right.
And Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, there would be some weirdo like CGI character that would be like Hulk's sidekick.
Me like Hulk. Can me Hulk? Can me Hulk out?
No.
Squished, dead.
Guys, I don't feel good.
Does it make you sick in your stomach?
A little bit.
I don't know. I kind of like the idea of this. Because, you know, Marvel's all about making these connections now. Uh-huh. Because we're never going to get, as long as Fox has X-Men, we're never going to get an X-Men Avengers team up. Mm-hmm. So having one of their other teams in that universe is kind of neat.
I'm for it only because, like I've said on the show before, I think that it more closely resembles the comic book universe. Mm. And I like the crossovers there.
Mm. Yeah.
They don't always do that great, but sometimes they are.
So. Yeah.
I'd rather see an Infinity Gauntlet before I see...
Well, that's happening.
Planet Hulk. What is it?
Yeah.
With, like, Adam Warlock,
Dragon. They kind of said that they might introduce Adam Warlock. I mean, if he's going to get introduced, Guardians of the Galaxy is the place to do it.
Well, yeah.
I want to
see a good Galactus. Like, I want to see these
We're never
going to
get We're never going to get Galactus as we like him.
It's just so...
No, that's no. He's always going to be a storm cloud.
Yeah.
From the stupid Silver Surfer movie.
That kind of...
What a dumb movie that was.
Not dumber than Green Lantern.
That's true. Yeah, how did Marvel do better with their stupid Silver Surfer movie than terrible Green Lantern? That'll always perplex me.
Better than one.
That's true, though.
That was saying much.
That was during the Rise fad, right?
Yeah. Rise of that. Yeah. So there's a few trailers I want to take a peep at, and then we'll come back and talk about them.
Peep.
And then, yeah, we're going to take a look at those and then come back. Okay.
I can watch the kid after school. I can do $11 an hour.
Let's go!
Here's a dime. Call your mom.
Costs more than a dime.
All right. Here. Costs more than that. Call collect.
You like him?
He's interesting. In a gotcha sort of way.
Hey, look, it's Oliver.
You need to defend yourself or you get mowed down.
Get out of here.
He's small, if you haven't noticed.
And so was Hitler.
That's a horrible comparison.
So how do you and Vincent know each other?
I'm working for this man. I go
hard. I'm also a dancer.
Who is she?
A lady of the night.
Do you know what that means?
She works at night.
Hey.
Have you read Marley and Me?
Yeah. Sad.
Why is it sad?
You don't know what happens?
No, that's why I'm reading it. What, does the dog die at the end?
No, I'm not saying anything.
Look how much I had left.
I was thinking you'd come stay with me.
It's okay if I tell them we're trying to get pregnant.
That's great.
And yep. You say we are because it's not sexist that way, right? That's what you told me.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be the creepy gay uncle.
You're hired.
Hello, Nick. Guy who saved my life. Guy who screwed my wife.
Ah, it was a blow.
Shh, let him do the...
Sorry.
So what do you want from me?
To tell her I said hi, please.
Y'all criminals. You tried to kill your bosses. Now you want to perpetrate a kidnapping? See, you can't have this both ways. Y'all the craziest criminals I've ever met. You want to pull this shit off? You gotta act like it.
Word.
Turn down for what?
Trailers. We're back from trailers. let's talk about... What was the first one? I don't even remember. That's how bad it was. No, St. Vincent. Yeah, Bill Murray.
It's a Bill Murray movie.
Yeah.
Looks just like a Bill Murray movie.
Where he's being kind of Bill Murray-ish.
Yeah.
Curmudgeonly.
It looks like something Frank Langella turned down.
Oh, okay. I can see that.
I'm kidding. But I'm glad Melissa McCarthy is not doing that character in this movie.
She
seems to have... Like, the whole Tammy thing, I feel like if it's going to get any criticism, it's... Okay, I'm tired of seeing her do this.
That same kind of silly...
Yeah,
she's turned into like a Will Ferrell, almost, and like this is going to be her...
Yeah.
...thing. What's that movie that he was in?
He was like the same character Stranger Than Fiction. Yeah.
So this is going to be like her Stranger Than Fiction.
Could be.
Well, she's proven a long time ago that she can act seriously.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I thought that her turn in The Heat was really good, and it was kind of unlike this buffoonish thing that she was doing.
Okay, I haven't seen
The Heat. The Heat is really, really good.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know. I feel like if it was anybody else, and I want to say the same thing about Skeleton Twins, it couldn't work. Like, it would just be this little independent film that wouldn't, you know, I don't know how you get Bill Murray, Naomi Watts, Melissa McCarthy in the same movie, you know.
Yeah.
But it's anybody else, and that doesn't, you know, it wouldn't be a wide release like this, you know. And then the Skeleton Twins... I think looks really funny, but again, if it were two other actors in the lead, no.
Right.
No, that's it. Number one, it wouldn't work. Number two, I feel like it would be too schmaltzy, too indie darling.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And like...
You know?
Well, which one was it that we said looked like Little Miss Sunshine?
That Skeleton Twins. Because okay. the turn with Bill Hader and Ty Burrell kind of feels like Steve Carell and as, you know... The gay uncle in Little Miss Sunshine, and kind of that same plot line.
But they even have a similar look.
Like
he looks like he's tried to commit suicide by slitting his wrist, and now his family's coming to help him, and now really it's all going to be like good.
Yeah, probably
And now we're going to reconnect.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's got the the lip syncing thing, and I just feel like I've seen a lot of this before. I still want to see it, because I like those actors and I think it'll be really funny, but I don't think that either of those do anything new.
No, I feel like I've seen both of those movies before.
Yeah,
multiple times. I can kind of,
and for that matter, I think I've seen the trailer for Horrible Bosses 2 before too.
Oh yeah,
it looks exactly like the first movie.
Well, it looks like The Hangover Part 2.
It looks like
Anchorman 2.
Right.
I mean, it just a. Just, it looks like I want to make some money.
Yeah.
So let's put these like semi famous actors that are pretty funny, but let's make them serious.
Right. Right.
And it worked once, bound to work again.
Yeah.
I can very much, I mean, going back to the first two, I can very much see the whole indie thing. And it just makes me think about Little Miss Sunshine, and I remember watching it and being kind of disappointed and having, because at that point, that vibe seemed kind of played out.
Right.
And Little Miss Sunshine, I felt like, was the crest of that, you know. That indie wave.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
got some actual yeah. names in it, and it did really well, and then
I mean,
people started trying to copy that, and it was done.
Well, see, you know, you get a few of these a year, and a lot of them still are direct-to-video, or, you know, they direct-to-demand. And, you know, and they a lot of them aren't bad. You know, I mean, there's some really great independent movies with really strong actors. One that comes to mind is, it was called The Vicious Kind. It may still be on Netflix, but it had Adam Scott and Brittany Snow and J.K. Simmons, and that was really great, but it, you know, is that same kind of indie vibe, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's indie movies by nature, I think, kind of have a similar vibe, but I just feel like there's going to need to be something else to these movies, you know? I mean, I just feel like they need to do something a little different.
Well, we talk, I hate to bring art into it, but we talk about this a lot in the art world.
Sure.
That movement plays itself out and gets absorbed back into the mainstream, and then you have a reactionary movement against the movement that was probably a reactionary movement against something else.
Right.
Exactly. And you just get this little cyclical kind of thing that just keeps going. And I feel like the indie movie kind of thing, although I love indie films, I think it's kind of getting absorbed into mainstream. And I hate using mainstream. Like,
it's
a really weird term.
It's weird because you have these major studios that have imprint, like Fox has Fox Searchlight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Sony has Focus, or you know, it's one of those.
Well, even New Line Cinema got absorbed into Time Warner.
No. Is that right?
So it got absorbed
into New Line. Somebody. Yeah.
So New Line is New Line. It's a subsidiary of.
And they never last, and it's, I mean, I understand that there's a difference between an independent film and an independent spirit. Like, you know, having, but I don't know. I mean, even in the art world, though, don't you think that so there's a movement happening, can somebody still do something new within that to
I think somebody refresh do something it? Inventive. You can refresh
right.
that movement. There's still tons to say about it,
but
you have to do it in a very creative
and I feel like
thought-provoking way. And I don't necessarily think these do that.
Thought-provoking is a good word to use, I think, because I don't get thought-provoking from either of these.
No.
I get that I'll probably connect with them on a human level.
Yeah.
That they're both about really human stories.
And they do have a vibe that, like, the opening sequence would have some animation, and it would be like, if I were a pickle and you were a bee, I'd swim with you in the deep blue sea. Like, just a whole, like late
on. It's the title of the episode. If I were a pickle and you were a bee.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Like,
no, I know exactly what you're talking about. But that's the thing. But what I like about Juno is that I feel like there was something a little more to say with that.
Yeah.
We're talking about things that people, for some reason, have a problem talking about.
Yeah.
You know, pregnancy or abortion.
Of these two, I feel like Skeleton Twins may do that a little bit better. But we'll see. I mean, I'll still watch both of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just depends on where Skeleton Twins will go.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to talk about the adultering wife? Is it going to talk about
right. The
homosexual brother that... Why did he want to commit suicide?
Yeah, why have they been separated for 10 years and that kind of thing?
Yeah, what's the deal with the mom?
Yeah.
I mean,
was that Catherine Keener?
I don't know, but wouldn't I mean, that would make
sense.
Wouldn't it be? Yeah. Horrible Bosses 2. I didn't think the first one was that great.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah. I really didn't
want to be in the minority.
No.
It's bumper sticker comedy that appeals to
I like that.
The
bumper sticker
masses.
Comedy. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
To go,
yeah, you're absolutely right.
Genius, because you don't have to think.
No, and I remember my thing with the first movie was so many people were like, "Oh my god, this movie is so funny," and I was just like, "No, it was. I mean, it was funny, but it wasn't like
it's high school funny."
Yeah,
you know, it's you know, fart jokes and poop.
Jennifer Aniston's being, you know,
look
like
at her, she's being sultry again.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, eh.
I'm just waiting for her to get butt ass naked. You know, she's gonna play coy like this in all these movies and show us kind of you.
She gets very skibbies. Close in the Miller, where I the mean, Millers. That, very
let
close.
Let me see the tatas. Let me see the. You know, let me see the. Let me see the runway.
Getting throw, real with. You know,
throw caution to the wind.
Don't get me wrong. I am very much not about like sexism and objectifying women and whatnot. But you know what? Stop playing this fucking game. You know. I feel like that's just.
This is my favorite thing that has ever happened on this show.
Well, I just feel
stop
like
playing this fucking game.
Yeah, I feel like she's just like trying to stay in just that little cusp
that of niche, like an orbit,
so she doesn't get flung away and be known as friends.
Well, so what's that new movie? Sex movie. That's what it's called. Her sex film coming out. It's got Jason Segel and Cameron Diaz, and she said today that she gets completely nude in the movie. And she said that one of the only reasons she did was because Jason Segel did too.
Oh.
That's interesting.
So we're going to see.
When an actor finally hits their point where they're like, yeah, okay.
Well, he already hit that.
No, he did. Oh, yeah, but she didn't. Yeah,
so,
she's
okay.
Never
so we're
going
to see his long, dangly wiener. But then we finally get to see.
Long, dangly wiener.
Cameron Diaz.
Finally.
Awesome.
Right. I'll make the trade.
I don't mean I'm going to go spank it in the bathroom, but I mean, it's just like, you know.
Sound engineer Alex Cunningham.
We're all of that age, right?
Right. Yeah.
We watched, you know, something about Mary, and it's like, oh, right. It's like my high school fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so maybe it's.
And now it's.
Maybe it's like your
this
elementary.
Is 15
school.
Years later.
Yeah. But, you know, we're all matured a little.
A little.
Curiosity.
So that wraps it up for news. I think we're going to take a little break and come back, and we're going to talk with artist Charles Clary about his work.
Stuff and things.
Stuff and things stuff. And things and stuff.
Yeah. Mike's gonna drink my tea.
It's a weird sharing table. Mm-hmm. It's a weird.
That's not good. Are we recording?
Well, not after cookies and cream. There's too much sugar. Yes, we're recording.
All right.
Let's put your tea. I mean,
everybody got some tea?
Pass the tea around.
I mean, I know where I've been.
I've taken two.
I know where you've been.
I know where I've been.
So we're back with artist Charles Clary. Charles Richard Clary.
Charles.
Why, that's your face? That's how they find you on Facebook.
I know.
That's how all of our listeners are going to stalk you on Facebook.
That was a poor mistake in college. Let me put my middle name in here. That'll sound way more professional. It'll set me apart.
Professional, pretentious,
Yeah, you know, it's a fine line. You know?
So how would you describe your art? We talked about it at the very beginning of the show. What do you call yourself? What kind of artist?
Paper artist.
You do say paper artist?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I work with paper.
Describe kind of for those of our listeners. I mean, we're gonna obviously put a link to some of your stuff on our page, but describe your work. I mean, describe, you know, what if for somebody who has never seen your work before, how would you describe it to them?
Oh man, think of a petri dish meets a topographical map.
Okay,
some archipelagos thrown in, all made with paper.
What is an archipelago?
That's a cluster of islands.
Okay.
A grouping of islands.
Oh, that's really
interesting.
So they
kind of look like petri dishes.
Wow.
From the air.
Right.
Wow. Let me know if I mumble.
No, that's really
my
good.
My girlfriend tells her, my fiance tells me I mumble all the time. I just think she's deaf, but yeah, whatever.
What'd you say?
What?
So you've seen some success with this.
I thought you were going to be like, you've seen some stuff.
You've done some things.
I've
Where
seen
did
some
I,
stuff, man?
Was paper? I mean, is that how you started?
No, I was a painter.
Yeah,
I thought I was gonna be an awesome still life painter,
right?
Because I was.
Those are a thing.
Awesome yes, still they still do exist.
Okay.
Aww.
Is that something you did growing up? Was paint or?
Grew most of the time.
Okay.
Like I thought I was gonna be a comic book artist.
Oh wow! All
I
right.
Quickly realized I was not very good at drawing imaginative.
Right.
Action. Crime fighters and blood and guts.
But you could draw
at the time.
You could draw like real life things,
yeah,
or okay
stuff that I looked at, saw.
Right.
You know, And then I was a painter in undergrad, and I was doing some really terrible paintings.
Where did you go for undergrad?
MTSU, Tennessee State University.
Where you are now faculty.
Where I teach now.
Right.
Only because most of the faculty I learned under are gone. That'd be a little weird thing, wouldn't it? Yeah. And then I got influenced by Theodore Geisel and Shel Silverstein. Theodore Geisel is Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
And Shel Silverstein and Gorey and, you know, political cartoons and that kind of stuff. So that ventured into the work and it got really silly for a while. Very West Coast kind of street art, graffiti, weird cartoonish robots. And then in grad school, I was still a painter. And then I was a drawer for a while.
Where did you go to?
Savannah College of Art and Design. Georgia.
What degree did you get from MTSU?
BFA in painting with a minor in illustration.
Okay. So then you went to Georgia.
Yeah, I went to Georgia for a little while. And then got introduced to some cool stuff. And I got a residency in New York. So I stayed in Manhattan in a studio that I was not supposed to stay at. But right. I did anyway because I was poor. Showered out of a sink.
Oh, God.
I like to call them whore baths.
Right.
Wash off the jiggly bits and the underpits. And, you know, Home Depot was a great resource if you're going to take whore baths in New York.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Good to know. Yeah. Then you just hang the washcloths out the window at night.
Nice.
Very interesting time. And then that's when it all changed. And
what started the change?
I was doing wall paintings.
Okay.
With a mixture of cutout drawings on top of it. So these real, really weird, biomorphic kind of microbiological kind of environments, drippy, droopy kind of things. Mm-hmm. And imagine if Dr. Seuss's world could melt, I guess.
Okay.
That's kind of what they look like. And then I wasn't liking where they were going. It still felt a little fictional, almost.
Right.
Like I wanted it to be more tactile.
Sure.
So I had an internship at a gallery in Brooklyn, and I was coming home one day, and I hopped off the L train, like, on 14th Street, and just walked up 8th Avenue, I guess, and then happened upon a paper store.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when Martha Stewart touched my life. I wish it hadn't. But she was making really great scrapbooking paper. No, it was awful.
Okay.
Shit her in the face. I'm
going to shit her in the face.
No. Edit.
Quote book.
Control Z. And then that, you know, from then on out, it was nothing but paper.
So when you first started paper, though, were you doing this kind of thing?
Nope.
What were you doing to start off with paper?
I was a double major at once.
Okay.
Like at one time. I was a music major and a...
Really?
And an art major, yeah. So I played percussion
for
like 5 or 6 years. Got into it really late in high school and just kind of had a knack for it.
Uh-huh.
And then played some in college. And then when I got to...
Like symphonic percussion or...?
Yeah, that and marching percussion. Okay. So did both. So I had to make a decision pretty quick because they require so much time.
Yeah.
So I just had more of an affinity toward art. So I went the art route, but tried to kind of keep the music influence into it. So a lot of my paintings became action paintings. So I started playing with drumsticks. So they could pick up a lot of house paint. So I was doing these really crazy Jackson Pollock-y, really kitsch, stupid paintings.
Right.
But they, you know, going through that process influences the shapes that I use now. And that now it's this kind of musical, viral realm in which we as the viewers act as the contagions. So we carry this virus from here and there. And,
interesting.
Yeah, so just kind of evolved.
So you started doing that in New York.
Mm-hmm.
How did you go from New York? Did you come right back here?
Yeah, it was only for like a semester.
Okay.
So it was a good way. Like, I won the residency. I had to compete with both the Atlanta and Savannah campus.
Right.
And they only pick one to go every quarter.
Okay.
So I went up there for, I guess, the first quarter of 2007.
Uh-huh.
And then I came back. And then they wanted to do an exhibit of my work along with the open studio, so they open the studios up to the public and they can come in, meander and talk to us while we try to fiddle through how to explain our work to whomever.
Right.
So at that point, then, you know, they were really, really small things. I mean, they were no bigger than 12 inches by 12 inches or so, and only about four layers deep. And
right.
I decided to go balls to the wall for this exhibition and did a 8-foot by 45-foot piece.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then it got crazy from there. That piece was the, I guess, the foyer into what I'm doing now.
Okay.
Because it was bought by Pierre Cardin, who's a big men's fashion designer guy. And I got an exhibition out of that in Paris at right out of grad school. And then just kind of snowballed. 2008, 2009-ish.
Okay.
Been out for a little while now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, right out of school, did you take a job with MTSU right away, or?
I applied for one, and they turned me down. They said no. I was like, damn, all right. But
What did you do in the interim?
I was making a bunch of work, and surprisingly and luckily, and all the stars aligned, and, you know, my sacrifices, you know, that I made to the pagan gods paid off. And
would you say, it sounds like the success with your work, has it been pretty steady? I mean,
I mean, it's been a shit ton of hard work.
Jeez, sure.
I give talks on my work to students all the time. I say all the time, that makes it sound like a complete jackass. I talk about my work on a consistent basis. Let's make myself not sound cocky as a douche. I keep telling them it's not this kind of dream lifestyle.
Right.
It's not what you think it is. It's not going to be like parties every night and getting wasted.
I mean, because you're still
get wasted every night if you wanted to. But
I mean, you still put in workshop hours every single day.
Oh, yeah, every day. At least in the summer, it's like 10 or 12 hours a day. More often
than that's not. Where you were all today. I mean, you were in the studio
pretty
today,
much,
right?
Yeah. Wow. I was in the wood shop, actually. I was making 7 new frames for stuff.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so, I'm a little bit of a workaholic.
Well, cool. So, talking a little bit more, so, you know, you talked about how you would get the forms from the paintings that you did. I mean, what's really interesting to me, the depth in your pieces... Yeah. All of this is just freehand? All of this is just coming out of your head?
Yep.
I mean, was it trial and error?
Yeah, a lot of trial and error. See, like, in the beginning, I would stop, like, you know, if a piece was 30 layers deep, I'd stop, like, 22 layers in.
Right.
So you'd have this big, it almost looked like the Grand Canyon, where you'd have, like, a huge, like, ground underneath.
Right.
And then cliffs on the sides. Okay. So it wasn't always just go until you can't go anymore. So it was... Sometimes they look like flower forms, so they had pistils and stamens, like, hanging out of them.
Interesting.
It sounds cool, but it wasn't at all. And it was, in the very beginning, that was just me fucking around, just kind of figuring out what worked and what didn't work.
What do you think was kind of a breakthrough for you? I mean, what did you discover that you were like, okay, this works?
Oh, man. The really big piece I did in 2008 for the open studio, the 8-foot by 45-foot piece. The openings weren't very organic. They looked like your typical cavern, like stalactites and stalagmites and where they met. And there were all these little quirky little robotic figures that were personified off of percussion instruments. So they were like the keepers of this world, or they were kind of like the Dougals off of Fraggle Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what they were called? The Dougals, Dozers, Doozers.
I know what you're talking about, sure.
So they were kind of like those in this. So you're supposed to think of them as these kind of nanobite-esque kind of technological things.
Sure.
And then they evolved out of the work. Parts of them have kind of come back into other bodies of work that I'm doing now, but, you know, they've since evolved out.
Now, that sounds more impersonal, more technical.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there has been a lot of personal elements to your work. Namely, one of the pieces that I have from you came out of a much larger piece to do with your mom. Can you talk a little bit about that? And, you know, I mean, just kind of how that came about.
So, in 2012, I think it was 2012, that summer my mom got diagnosed with small cell carcinoma of the lungs, and it's fatal. Like, there's no cure for it. They could treat it. You're lucky if you can get 7 months, and then, you know, if you're super lucky, maybe 5 years, but that's about it.
Right.
So it's pretty devastating news, and my dad was going through something similar. He had throat cancer that had spread to lymphatic cancer and mouth cancer and everything else that you can probably think of, and both of them were smoking-related cancers, so that was kind of tough. So when she got that diagnosis, I was traveling a lot back and forth between here and Morristown, mm-hmm. Tennessee. So I started doing a lot of drawings because, you know, I couldn't take big work with me or anything like that. And, you know, it did spark a really great new body of work that, you know, I kind of keep on the down. I won't say down low. I don't show a ton, but it's nice to kind of step away from the big installations from time to time. But then she passed in February. It was February 15th. I remember it was like 3 o'clock in the morning my time. It was 4 o'clock Morristown time. And it was my brother, and he was like, you know, she's gone. So it was a really tough kind of moment. And
sure.
Then we hopped in the car and went that way. And for a long time, I didn't make any work just because I didn't know how. Like, I didn't know how to kind of, like, be happy. I didn't want to deal with anything that was happy or, like, things that brought me joy. And then I had an exhibition in Alabama with a buddy of mine. And I was still struggling. School had just ended, and now I could actually think about everything that had happened, and it was, you know, really tough. You know, 2 weeks after my mom had passed, my dad passed, and so it was just like, holy shit.
Right.
So just to be able to finish teaching was nuts. But then when I had that show, I think it was in June, my buddy and I started talking, and I was wanting to do a piece to where there was a tower for every blood workup that she had.
Okay.
And it was just really kind of difficult to try to figure out how many actual blood workups that she had. So sure. The next kind of logical step was, well, how many days from diagnosis to her passing? So it ended up being like, I think it was 204 at the end, 204, 205, something like that. So I was like, well, this will be a good piece. I can kind of memorialize her and, you know, kind of relive those days that we had. So the piece ended up being about 8 feet by about 35, 40 feet.
Wow.
So there were 7 really big towers. They were 17 inches by 17 inches. They were probably about 35-ish layers deep. So those represented the months. And then there were 26 12 by 12s, which is one of the ones you have. They represented the weeks. And then there were 174 other ones that represented every other day.
Sure.
So there were really good days. There were very mundane days. There were days that were just horrific. Right. So I kind of, you know, tried to, as best I could, to kind of make all those kind of merge together. And it was really difficult because it took 6 months to make the piece because I was teaching at the same time, and I teach a heavy kind of teaching schedule.
And in a lot of ways, I mean, you're reliving that as you're doing the work.
Yeah, and that was nice. That was kind of cathartic because I was getting those days back.
Wow, right.
But installing the piece became even that much more difficult because it's like every piece that you put up, that's reliving, or it's like more of a countdown.
Sure.
So I had a countdown, and then I had a count up.
Wow.
And then I had a countdown
again.
And the piece will never be seen again that way. It's all been broken up. You know, all those pieces will never be in the same place ever again. They're all going to be displayed individually. I think that's, you know, what my mom would like. And I've given several away to close friends and family that were there through the entire kind of thing. So, yeah, it's kind of like spreading her memory, I guess.
Yeah, that was one of the things that, you know, when you offered to give me a piece, you know, obviously I was very touched anyway, but, you know, you kind of talked about how just the giving away of pieces was also cathartic.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really interesting. So, I mean, from there, you know, you're kind of, for me as an outsider looking in, I love to see the evolution of your work. Can you talk a little bit about the stuff that you're doing now? It's really interesting. It's much different than anything I've seen you do before.
It's quite a bit different. So, I mean, I've done box work where it's like these holes eaten away through kind of a flat panel, and it looks kind of necrotic, and it almost looks like peepholes or glory holes or, you know, whatever orifice you can think of.
Right.
So the newer work for me, like and I've been thinking about why I'm making the newer work that I'm making, and it's almost like I'm in a remission kind of phase.
Sure.
So it's like I've come to a place of being, I don't want to say healed. It sounds like really touchy feely.
Right.
I'm a touchy feely guy, but I don't like touchy feely in work for some reason.
Sure.
But for me, it's like I'm in that kind of remission phase. I'm at a place of forgiveness, or I'm at a place being cured of the sadness or things like that, but there's still kind of that void in my life. There's still that kind of destructive events that I still think about on a daily basis.
So talking about destructive and there being a void, I mean, the work that you're doing now, you know, we start with a wallpapered panel, and there's a, you know, this gaping hole in it. I mean, I guess that's reflective of the destruction.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you have this pristine thing, and, you know, you're accustomed to it being beautiful and you know, pristine, all shimmery and pretty. And then I go in with a hammer and bust the shit out of it. Sure. And then I shape it from the back to make it look like, you know, a hole has been kind of blown through this thing. And then I'll put my paper constructs behind it. And it's supposed to, for me, as I'm working through it, it's for me is, you know, there is beauty underneath the surface. There is beauty from destruction. I mean, that's like a story as old as time. But it's, you know, coming back to my ideas about music and virology and all this kind of stuff, you know, it's almost kind of like the mold or the fungus has kind of been trapped in whatever decade that wallpaper's from, like the really kitschy kind of wallpaper, and it's kind of like black mold.
Wow.
So you can't scrub it or it'll poof and spread it even more. So you have to kind of cut it out of the space that it lives in and dispose of it kind of in a biohazard way. So it's almost like these things have laid dormant for forever. And, you know, going through what I did, I had, you know, think a lot about my childhood and how shitty it was. And, you know, all those memories kind of come flooding back. And then those are kind of counteracted with, you know, that person's not there anymore. And you did love them on, you know, a certain level, but you remember all the shitty stuff too. And it's just like, so, yeah, so it's, you know, new work's a lot of fun. You know, the colors are kind of coming back into it. For a while, the work got it really kind of subdued. The color palette was very muted, very pastel-y. It almost was kind of ashen. So it's that kind of look that people get as they're getting ready to die or as they've entered that two-week time period of their body prepping themselves to pass away. So those kind of colors came into it, and now it's really loud and annoying and vibrant and very 80s, 90s-esque kind of color palette.
But I think the color palette, you know, in the wallpaper and everything, I think it all meshes together really well. It's very interesting.
So it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to where it goes. Like, eventually, I hope to kind of inset some of these into walls and to where it becomes flush with the surface or, you know, 8-foot by 4-foot walls or, you know, just these big-ass faux walls with gnarly holes in it and really shitty wallpaper. You might get any wallpaper or any
shout out to anybody out there. If you got old, you know, kitschy,
really just gnarly wallpaper. I don't want any mold or anything.
But just
anybody know like a treasure trove of a place that I can find some really great wallpaper.
We might have some resources out there.
I've already plundered all things possible in the two Goodwills in Murfreesboro. Yeah. Apparently nobody makes it anymore. And if they do, it's really fucking expensive.
Yeah.
$25 a roll.
Oh, my God.
As opposed to, like, 99 cents a good roller.
Yeah, right. Jesus.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess, what's next? I mean, where do you see this going? Like, is there an end goal? I mean, or is it just, do you see it constantly evolving? I mean, how much more can you do with this?
Oh, I can do it. Ton more. Like, the ideas are just stewing in my head. They're just festering. It's like I don't want to say it's like a cancer. That'd be a terrible joke. Larger is a goal. I've been working on some really large pieces lately because I worked so small for a long time that I wanted to make them bigger. So yeah, there's some 2-foot by 2-foot pieces. There's some big installation pieces that are 4-foot by 3-foot, with 110 towers on top of it and whatnot. Eventually, I'd like to get into laser cut or water jet cut metal and then powder coat that they're based off of my paper designs and they can be installed in, you know, on buildings or out in the public so I can kind of capture the viewer's gaze in their own kind of place to where, you know, galleries can be a little scary.
Sure.
Because, yeah, I can be a little uppity, but
right.
not my galleries. I'm just saying from experience, it's kind of scary walking into a gallery and having somebody greet you and be like, oh, do you know about art? Not really. I just want to look at stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Fair enough.
Right.
So, you know, bigger. I want more of a slope of a rise to, like, fame. Right. I don't want to say fame. Fame would be awesome. Don't get me wrong. I don't want a meteoric rise and then just like a hard crash. Yeah, So, you know, just steady as it goes. I'm only 33, getting ready to be 34. So I'm still young. I'm still pretty young in the game. Absolutely. And there's some really great things kind of happening. Been published in 4 or 5 paper art books.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about, you know, where your work's been. What, you know,
if you're in Las Vegas, I have 2 large 3-foot by 10-foot pieces in the Cosmopolitan Hotel.
Wow.
That was my biggest commission to date, I think. I got a really big installation at the Music City Center in Nashville. I've got another big piece at the Pinnacle Bank headquarters in Nashville.
Do you ever find out how people hear about your art, or do you just get the commission and you know, like?
I've got some pretty good galleries that help do that kind of stuff, and they have that kind of knowledge and those connections.
Like this, if this is what you're looking for, we have somebody
who... Yeah.
Okay.
I've got some pretty good advocates out there that have fallen in love with my work and my process. Sure. and things. I have a pretty big digital presence.
Right.
It's a little... God bless. I don't know. It's weird talking about success without sounding like a complete douche.
No, it's fine. you don't sound like a douche.
Because, you know, you want to know kind of things. So, everybody's typed their name into Google before.
Sure.
And it's really weird. The first, like, 17 pages are nothing but... My work.
Then you get Jared Leto, you know,
doing weird things, and people texting me and be like, "Holy shit, Jared Leto likes your work." And I'm like, "Who? Oh yeah, that guy, that guy. Angel face, baby. I got him." I work just as hard as on the business side of things as I do in the studio. I think for every 3 hours I'm in the studio, there's probably another 30 minutes to an hour that I'm on the computer posting things or uploading or.
Do you have representation?
I do. I've got the Reimer Gallery in Nashville, the Diana Lowenstein Gallery in Miami. I've done some work with Petragis Gallery, her contemporary in Utah.
Is that how it works in the art world? Like, because if it were... When I say representation, the first thing I think of is an agent.
Yeah.
You know, this guy that makes calls and... You know, whatever tries to get you work and takes a cut. Is that how a gallery functions?
Pretty much. I mean, they have their contacts. They pay for the space that they're in. They pay for all the stuff during the opening. They pay for the show cards most of the time. They'll pay for shipment of the work to collectors or anything like that. So, I mean, they do put in a lot of work. And you show in their space. It's like having a concert or something. So it's up, you know, the typical run for a gallery show is about a month, and then it comes down and they switch it out with another show. But they get 50% cut of the work, which sounds like a lot, but again, I don't have to pay for a space. I don't pay hardly for any of that kind of stuff. Right. They've got their email lists and their collectors and patrons and the who's who in the whatever cities that they're in. So, I mean, it's a weird thing.
Right. Backing up a little bit, you talked about, you know, the amount of time that you spend and you're engaged.
Mm-hmm.
Is that hard? I mean, the balance between the two?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little easier right now. Like, I mean, it's we're kind of in a shitty situation. So her name's Katie Stringer. She's got...
shout out to Katie.
Hey, Katie. She'll like that. She's got a PhD in public history, and she got an opportunity for a really great executive director position at the Blount Mansion in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So we talked about it and said if there was any point in our lives that we could be apart, this would be the time. It won't be forever, but, you know, if this is what you need to do right out of school to get the connections and all these kind of things that you need, then, you know, let's do it. So she's in Knoxville right now. We see each other probably twice a month, maybe a little bit more, depending on whatever month. So it's a little easier now only because, you know, I've got so much free time. She's really good about getting me to take breaks.
Right.
Because if I didn't have somebody like that, I would just work and work and work and work and work. Which is good, but you can also kind of oversaturate the market with your work, and then you can lose interest. So that, like, chomping at the bit to see new stuff. Yeah, you know, so you'd be a little careful.
Whole thing where your life isn't really
exactly enjoyable anymore, exactly. You know? So yeah, I do my best to work minimally, like at least take a day or two off. And it, you know, for me it could be a Tuesday, Wednesday, or it could be a Tuesday, Thursday, or it could be an entire weekend, or it could be, you know, whatever. If I've done I mean, I make work really, really fast. Like, I did 3 pieces yesterday.
Wow, okay.
Finished 5 pieces in the last 2 days. So, I mean, it's just, I work really fast.
You were also, you know, like, when we talked a little bit about the movie, Katie was also in our movie.
She was.
The bearded woman in our
bearded
movie.
Bearded lady. She'd have been like a bearded midget. Oh, I shouldn't say midget. I'm sorry. Bearded little person.
That's fine. All of our midget listeners.
Sorry, guys.
So, but what, you know, you, but... In helping with the movie, you also helped us with some props. Mm-hmm. I mean, you made our strongman hammer. And I also know that, you know, you're an avid toy collector.
Yes.
Are these the kind of things that help you, you know, like, because they're still artistic.
Yeah.
So you occupy your time with those kind of things. Yeah. I mean, what kind of stuff influences you? What kind of, you know, like in popular culture? I mean, does that kind of stuff help?
Yeah, I mean, I like the weird. I'm all about just weird medical oddities. Like, just, you know, having to go to
the got whole a hell of a collection.
Going through all the hospital stuff and
sure.
My mom and that kind of stuff and, you know, some of the medical stuff that I've had to do, which hasn't been very much, but, you know, that kind of mixed with the horror genre, I just really got into weird old medical stuff.
Right.
So I've got a ton of medical bottles and different kind of medical tools and...
Well, there's a lot of body horror reflected in your work,
yeah,
I think. You know?
Yeah, just... I mean, there's these kind of ideas of flesh-eating bacteria right. or, you know, the new kind of, what's it called, crocodile? Like, it's a weird Russian meth.
Oh, yeah,
that
okay.
You take it and you pretty much die in the first year.
Right.
But, like, the first time you take it, eats away your skin necrotically
yeah.
from the inside out. So you get all these really gross wounds and
yeah.
you know, I look at that stuff a lot. It's not that I'm not a morbid person, but those are the kind of things that I'm kind of talking a little bit about in my work. So I've got to look at bacteria and fungus and
sure.
all these kind of disease stuff. So you know, I started collecting a lot of that stuff. I was always big into science. That's why it's kind of, that's why the work is what it is.
Right. One of your cooler, like the, toy things you collect. You collect mm-hmm. a lot of vinyl toys.
A lot of vinyl, yeah.
Are there artists, you know, vinyl artists, toy artists who inspire you at
yeah,
all?
Yeah. You know, Mars One, Joe Ledbetter, Sucklord is pretty fantastic, and he's really good at poking fun
sure.
at himself. A lot of his stuff is like, why the fuck are you buying my work? Like,
right.
on the back of the card itself.
Right.
Because one of my better figures, for me at least, was... it's a pink stormtrooper, and it's from the Gay Empire series.
Okay, right.
I just think that's hilarious.
Right.
But I like that he, you know, he made that type of figure, and it's kind of poking fun at society. It's poking fun at, you know, all these kind of weird stereotypical notions that people have.
Right.
You know, there's just a ton. I mean, there's so many. Luke Chua has some really great stuff.
Yeah.
Sam Flores. Jeff Soto, Blaine Fontana. I mean, just tons and tons
right.
of stuff. Yeah.
Have you ever considered getting into that game at all?
I have. I'm just trying to figure out a good way
right.
to think about. I thought about paper toys that you could print out.
Okay.
And things, but I'm not. I'm good at math, but I'm not good at trying to make, like, I'd need to figure out a computer program that I could
okay.
input a drawing into, and like, what would this look like if it were paper?
Right.
So it's things that I'm considering. I still draw a lot. I still make these just goofy robotic little creatures that are mm-hmm. still kind of functioning on the nanobot kind of technology. But it's getting with somebody that does sculpture on a regular basis to kind of take my 2D designs and make them more three-dimensional and sellable, and I won't say sellable, but marketable.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. As far as what do you teach at MPSU?
Anything they tell me to.
Okay.
No, I got hired in on a foundations track. So foundations in the art is all the beginning level courses to give you the tools to be successful in the upper division classes. So we teach you skills.
Right.
So I teach drawing 1, drawing 2, 2D and 3D design, painting 1, and orientation to art, which is art history for non-art majors,
okay.
but not really history.
Yeah. Are there any like things you can point to, like tangible things that teaching has done for you in terms of making your own stuff?
Patience.
Okay.
A lot of patience. It's taught me that it's okay to fail, because I tell my students that it's great I think that's the best thing that you can ever do is just fail. And fail miserably. Like, fail hard.
Sure.
I'm a big advocate of failing. Yeah,
and a lot of my students are, they're so conditioned to everything has to be perfect the first time. And that's just not how life works. You know, it's taken me 6-7 years to get to where I am now. And it took a lot of no's. It took a lot of, like, face plants and belly flops and all kinds of stuff to make the work that I make now. A lot of the stuff along the way was really shit work, but it influenced the better work that I'm doing now.
You know what would make a great museum, almost like a Bizarro Louvre, is the First Draft Museum.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a bunch of failures from different artists and great thinkers. And
yeah, I think there is a museum of bad art.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's not, like, I'd rather see it, like, let me see your shit sketches. Let me see, like, the first five that didn't work.
Right.
Right.
But I know that there is a museum somewhere, and I can't think of the name of it, but I've seen it.
That's pretty cool. Is it from famous artists or people who are
just artists who made, like, really shit work.
Okay.
Like, it's just like, oh.
That's interesting.
Why would you do that?
I'd love to see both sides. The famous fuck-ups, and then, you know, people who just, you know, every day.
Yeah, because it's a struggle still.
Like, oh, yeah,
you don't
sure.
get it right the first time. I still have sketchbooks of things that I never show people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a place that I can do anything I want.
Right.
And that's where the weird shit, it's like, maybe this will, no. Once I visualize that is not good.
And I guess the last question pertaining to teaching would be, given the chance, would you rather just make stuff full time, or would you want to keep teaching a part of your life regardless, or if it was just small?
I would still teach small, I think. Okay. Like, I get so much enjoyment out of it, and I've only taught for 5 years, and only three of those have been full time. The first two were adjunct,
sure,
right outside of grad school, so that was like one class or three classes, and, you know, just really low loads. But it keeps me up to date on kind of what's going on in the art world. It keeps me fresh with names. It keeps me on my toes, which is awesome. And then it keeps me to keep pushing forward. Without teaching, I would make a ton more work, right, but I would probably lose a lot of the influence. I mean, I would still look and stuff, but I probably wouldn't look as much as I do now.
Right.
So there's always going to be a part of me that, I mean, ideally I'd love to be on like a 2-2 and just do studio work.
Sure.
That would be fantastic, but you know, those are few and far between.
Right.
So you've got to keep crawling, breaking those fingernails until you get out of the whale.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I think let's take a little break, and then we'll come back with a little toy trivia.
Oh, dear God.
Go.
We're
back with a little trivia here with Charles Clary. You ready?
I guess.
Okay. Who made the He-Man action figures? I can give you multiple choice.
Give me multiple choice.
Galoob, Hasbro, Mattel, or Toy Biz?
Oh, it's Mattel or Toy Biz.
Which one?
Fuck. Mattel.
Yes!
Okay.
All right. So see? You've got 1 point.
I think Toy Biz made those X-Men ones.
They did.
Yeah.
Like the early 90s X-Men.
Sorry, I curse a lot. No, that's fine.
We curse all the fucking time. Here's a good one that I thought was kind of interesting. What Marvel action figure was a repainted 10-inch Xena figure? Would you like the choices?
Sounds like Jean Grey.
Would you like the choices?
Yes, I would.
She-Hulk, Mystique, Rogue, or Jean Grey?
Now you're making me think it wasn't Jean Grey.
Jean Grey's small. I can see She-Hulk and Xena being kind of the same build.
But it depends on how they represented her.
Yeah.
Right.
Thing. I'm going to go Rogue.
It was She-Hulk. Cameron would have gotten that one right.
That makes sense.
I thought my first thought was Mystique, just because I could kind of see the dress and the being similar with the skirt and everything.
And I said Jean Grey was because she had really long hair.
Yeah,
and Xena did too, but Xena didn't have straight hair.
Sure,
she had straight hair.
I guess
Jean Grey has the big, like 80s,
the bouffant.
It's huge.
Damn. So
50%.
Here you go.
Great.
Who made the action figures for the Tick?
Buck, I have that's
I know. I'll give you 2 points if you can tell me
Toy Biz.
No.
No.
I'll give you choices. Mattel, Bandai, or Hasbro.
Oh god.
You know this.
Is it Bandai?
It is Bandai. Yeah. It is Bandai.
Because I have a shit ton of those. Bought them for $2.
I know, you got such a piece,
and they're all like in really good condition.
Not in the face. Not in the face.
Right. which characters were in Movie Maniacs Series 1?
All of them?
You get a point for each one.
Oh, jeez. Okay, so Pinhead was...
No.
No, he wasn't.
They only did Pinhead as a Hellraiser series.
Oh, okay. So Freddy.
Yep. That's a point.
Jason.
Yes. There's three more.
Okay. Alien? No. No. I took that one back. I wasn't.
Well, we're not going to take a point away.
Take his hand off the
keys. Poop. Hold on. Let me think. Let me think.
Two of them, I was like, really? Like, it kind of threw me for a loop.
Michael Myers?
No. He was Series 2.
Okay.
There's one big obvious one.
Really? One big obvious one?
I think so.
Michael Myers?
You said
that. I already said that. I am not drunk. I haven't had anything to drink.
Is it a jackal?
It's a jackal! It's not a fucking jackal! Jeebus.
You can forfeit.
No.
I'm
not forfeiting. Zero. Were there any from The Exorcist?
Incorrect.
All right.
Satan.
Captain Howdy. Pazuzu.
Pumpkinhead. There's no pumpkin.
Now, he was Series 3?
Yeah, because I think he came out with Alien and Chucky and them.
Was Alien one of them ever? Was that Alien?
Maybe not.
The Queen, I think, was a box set.
Ah, that's right. And the Alien was always NECA released.
There's a big slasher you missed. Come on.
Really? A big slasher that I'm missing?
Yes! You said Jason and Freddy and Michael isn't part of the first series. Who else would it be? Oh, I'm fixing to just tell you, and you're going to lose.
Don't tell me, because then I'll be bad. I won't be bad. I don't know. Because I know Ash and Evil Ash aren't in the first series.
No, that's 2 or 3.
Yeah.
With the Blair Witch.
Fuck. Oh, God. You motherfucker.
Oh, you're going to feel it. Here we go. I'm telling you. Now, one goes with.
Oh,
I'm telling you right now.
It's not Pennywise, is it?
Oh, my God. No. There's never been a Pennywise.
I know. That's weird. There should be.
Uh-huh. It's Leatherface.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
I'm going to see. Oh.
Leatherface, then Eve and Patrick from Species 2.
Really?
Yeah, right?
Those were terrible figures.
Well, you're about to get another one based on those.
God bless.
So, there was 2 Eve variants. Do you remember what the variants were?
One was her as the creepy ass.
They were both Alien Eve. But what was it about the figure? I thought this was kind of...
One had nipples, one didn't.
Kind of. Yeah, one had spikes and the other did not. Yeah, I'll give you that one.
All right.
Name...
I'm doing really bad.
Name any of the characters from Clive Barker's Infernal Parade. This is, again, you get points for each one.
It's like Sickly Bob. No, something Bob.
No Bob. No.
There's a Bob.
There's no Bob.
No Bob.
Totally a Bob.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because he's a fat guy with his, like, stomach ripped open. He was gluttony.
That's from another one.
Oh, that's from Tortured Souls.
Yup.
What did you ask
me? Infernal Parade.
Oh, Infernal Parade.
Oh!
I
I was thinking Carnival of Souls.
Oh no.
Sorry. Oh god.
That would have been too easy.
There was one little thing with the things of heads.
Uh-huh.
In it. Do I have to tell you the name?
No names. Come on. You got to know at least you of all people, you got to know one of them.
I know. See, I'm getting it mixed up with the tortured souls and the twisted Wizard of Oz.
And Twisted Sister, yeah. The D. Snyder figure. I actually think he did a D. Snyder figure. Maybe.
I'd buy that. Because there was the master of the ceremony guy.
Yep.
Does that count?
If you had his name, it would.
Now, shut up. The master guy. I think there was a lion of some sort. There was
okay.
I don't know.
Here we go.
Know.
Hold on.
I can see him in my head.
Tom Requiem.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Hold on one second.
I've bid on all of these on eBay. But I was just like, oh, Carnival of Souls.
Do you have any of those?
I don't. I have two of the tortured souls. I've got the big mouth stomach guy.
Right.
And I've got...
All right, name any of the...
infused with stuff.
Name any of the tortured souls.
Oh, well, great.
And Bob is not one of them.
Bob is totally one. Is he in two?
Maybe. Definitely not in one.
Jesus, I'm sucking it up.
It's okay.
It's not okay.
No, we're not going to hold it against
you. I am a toy aficionado. I just have a really shit memory.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Nothing?
No, give me a second.
Okay.
Because there's a blind lady.
I'll give you a point. Yes, Suffering Bob is one
Suffering
of the
Suffering Bob.
In two.
Alright, Suffering Bob. He's a great one because he's on a gurney. And he's got all these tubes, but his stomach's blown. Oh, it's great.
Just awesome.
There's the stomach mouth guy.
That's part one. Yeah, that's from one.
Yeah, I have that one.
I'll give
it's
you a point for
Sid
stomach mouth.
Something.
Nope.
No.
What is his name? Stomach mouth guy. Are we calling it quits?
No. We're the stomach. But I can describe most of them.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean.
Yeah, I know it doesn't matter though, because there's the girl with the blind mask thing on. It's like weeping.
That's part two. Ooh, oh, getting them all messed up.
I'm getting all the twos right. Wrong. I'm getting the twos right. And then there's the guy that's like this, and he's on a gurney, and he's got all the tubes, and he's been skinned.
That's what you said Bob
inflated.
Was.
No!
Didn't he?
No, Sickly Bob is the guy that's on the gurney. He's an obese guy that's his stomach
blown
out.
Oh, was he on a gurney,
out.
Though?
Yeah.
Okay.
The other guy is like shackled, and he's been skinned alive.
Is it a shackle?
Like,
it's a shackle.
Shackle! Is it a shackle? Alright, tell me, I don't know.
Alright, so, from the top.
You never told me the names of the Carnival of Souls guys, either.
Oh, I can bring that up.
You probably should.
God. I can't even pronounce it.
You on just like eBay?
Agonistas?
Was she the girl?
No,
the
blind, Lucidique was, I think, was the
Lucidique the was the girl with the blindfold.
Mongroid, Scythe Meister, Talisac, and Venal.
Oh, I've got a Talisac, too. I've got a 12-inch Talisac.
Yeah, I bet you do.
That's for another podcast.
And then the Infernal Parade was Bleb the Sabbaticus Beast Tamer, Bethany Bled the Prisoner in the Iron
Prisoner?
Maiden. Prisoner? Dr. Fetter's Family of Freaks.
Yeah, that's the heads in the jars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Tom she Requiem,
totally
King of Showmen with Clovio.
Sure, that one too.
Mary Slaughter and the Spike Swallower. And the Gollum Elijah.
Yeah.
All right.
What else? You got anything else?
That's it, man.
Nothing? Oh, God.
We'll give you like five or six.
Oh, come on. That's abysmal.
That's fine.
Has anybody ever done better?
It depends.
Of course.
Yeah,
in
the first
few
couple,
we did. Way back when.
Me doing Final Fight, and I think you did one that you did really well with.
Yep.
You just made them harder. You didn't want
no,
anybody beating your scores. That's what it was.
You can never tell.
That's totally what it was.
You can, well, we didn't.
Like,
we didn't.
Who
do...
made the original Tron figures? NECA. And there were only four.
What were they?
They were Flynn, Master Command,
The guy that was Master Command's lackey and one soldier.
I'll give you points for
and
this.
And there were two blue guys and two red guys.
I'll give you
guys.
Points for knowing your own question.
And there were only three Tron light cycles, a blue, a red, and a yellow. Primary colors. And they're really hard to find.
All right, we'll make you an even box. 10 points. Charles Clary.
Hey-o!
Where can people find your stuff?
Yeah, where can we direct them?
You can go to charlesclary.wordpress.com.
Okay.
Katie is my
moderator.
Webmin administrator, whatever she is. She's fantastic about helping me keep things up to date and whatnot. I take the photos. She does all the interwebby things.
Sure.
You know, if you really want to see some articles and things, you can go to highfructose.com and just type in my name, or this is colossal.com, type in my name, Beautiful Decay, type in my name. There's some cool articles there. If you're in the Nashville area, Native Magazine, Native Nashville, this month in July is going to be featuring my work.
Hell yeah.
In a pretty decent-sized article.
Cool.
So if you can find that mag, grab a copy. Tell me what you think.
Really braggy.
Yeah, it did. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Comments, feedback, you're more than welcome to follow me on my blog. I post stuff at least once a month, if not two, depending on how active I am. It could be as much as at least four times a month.
Cool.
Again, Katie's fanatical about that, so yeah, show her some love.
Right.
Shout out to the beard lady. Not my type of love. But yeah, you know what I mean. Shout out to the lady.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Well, this has been a great show.
Yeah. Appreciate you guys having me on.
37. Oh, well, it's 37. That'll always be.
Oh, sorry.
37.
Charles getting excitable.
37.
Oh, he said it. So we're going to need a bigger show. This has been.
It would be Charles.
Charles Clary.
And I have been Mike D. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you next week.